Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James, along with Pastor William Fink. This should be our final installment on the book of Isaiah. And today is Friday, June the 25th. And I forget which installment. I think it's number 14 on Isaiah. But we're going to be covering the last four chapters, chapter 62 through 66. And do you have any comment before from where we left off, Bill, before we go into chapter 62?
No, honestly, I don't. I mean, we've seen in Isaiah that we've seen, you know, just off the top of my head, we have seen replacement theology discredited again and again.
Yes.
That's the most consistent message in Isaiah.
Right, right. And by the way,
The promises are always to the seed, the descendants of Jacob, forever,
right.
Period,
right.
End of story.
Yeah.
And it's a constantly repeated, and we'll see it here also,
right.
It's a constantly repeated message in Isaiah.
Yeah, and there's no replacement theology anywhere in the Old Testament, anywhere. There's
well, right.
One word in the Old Testament.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the whole book of Isaiah is about the divorce of all Israel, the putting off of all Israel,
mm-hmm.
and the promise of regathering of all Israel.
Right. And of course, the Jews accuse the Judeo-Christians of, you know, doing replacement theology, which they do in a sense because they teach that the Israelites were replaced by their so-called church. Okay. However, the Jews themselves practice replacement theology by pretending to be Judah.
Yeah, right. They're trying
to
replace
Israel.
Judah. They're
yeah.
Trying to replace.
So it's the Jews who are the original replacement theologians, not the Judeo-Christians. And there's simply no doubt that the Edomites, who began pretending to be Israel and Judah in the land of Judea, starting around 125 B.C. through 70 A.D., and that's the time period where they reigned over the true Judahites of Judea, that's when those people began pretending to be Israelites. But they're not Israelites, folks. They're Jews. There's a big difference between Israelites and Jews. Okay. Chapter 62, verse 1. For Zion's sake, I will not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burns. And, of course, this righteousness, we've had glimmers of it. But we've not had all Israel practices righteousness on a national scale. I can't remember the last time. America got close to it when America was founded as a Christian republic, but that's probably the closest any nation has ever come. Verse 2, and the nations, not Gentiles, folks. Gentiles is a horrible translation. That word doesn't belong in the Bible. It should be nations, and in the Greek, it should be ethnos, which can mean nation or race, depending on the context. Often race is actually the best translation. And, of course, from the Hebrew, it's goy. Goy would be a singular, and goy means nation. Like, you can't use the word goy for a single person, not scripturally. It's never used in the Bible for a single person. And goyim would mean nations. Goy is nation. Goyim is nations. And the nations shall see your righteousness, and all kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name, not Jew, folks. The new name, you can call it Christian, you can call it Caucasian. We are Caucasian Israel. You shall be called by a new name, which the mouth of Yahweh shall name, or Anglo-Saxon. And Isaac shall thy seed be called, Genesis 21:12. Verse 3, you shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of your Elohim. You shall no more be termed forsaken, neither shall your land any more be termed desolate, but you shall be called Hephzibah, and your land Beulah, for Yahweh delights in you, and your land shall be married. Okay, did you have a chance to look up these two words here, Hephzibah?
Well, Beulah basically means married.
Married. Oh, okay.
It's the whole, you know, it's the same idea of Israel, you know, being married to Christ or remarried to Yahweh that we see in the New Testament right through the Revelation. And Hephzibah, but that was the name of Hezekiah's wife.
Oh, okay.
And Manasseh's mother. And it means my delight is in her.
Uh-huh.
I don't see how it applied to Manasseh's mother because he certainly wasn't Yahweh's delight. But
right. Sometimes we have joking names, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, he was anything but. Yeah, but the Jews have never had their own land.
That's right.
The land they have today is not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
It was bought with Saxon blood. It belongs to the King of England, properly.
That's right, yeah.
And it therefore must be ours on the day of Yahweh's Jubilee, on that final day of release, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Jews have never had a glorious land, that's for sure.
That's right.
And Jerusalem can never be considered righteous, because thou shalt be called by a new name.
Mm-hmm.
And all the righteousness in Jerusalem had long ago, according to verse 2 here, gone forth.
Mm-hmm.
It left, it departed, or I'm sorry, verse 1 here.
Yeah, and then Jerusalem actually means the people, not just the city, okay? Because the fact is that the 10 northern tribes are also Israel, and when Jerusalem is reborn in us, okay, Jerusalem will fulfill all of these things. The city of Jerusalem will not fulfill.
We shouldn't even call it Jerusalem anymore.
Well, right, but it's used prophetically here and figuratively.
Well, yes, I mean, we shouldn't call that city in Palestine.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
That's like an abomination.
It's cesspoolia, right? Okay, verse 5. For as a young man marries a virgin, so also your son shall marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your Elohim rejoice over you. Of course, that day has not come yet. That this ultimate rejoicing is set for the wedding feast of the Lamb.
Well, we all have the marriage offer. It's not consummated yet. It's
right.
Not yet, you know, not until the return of Christ.
That's right. Verse 6. I have set watchmen upon your walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day or night. You that make mention of Yahweh, keep not silence. Now, of course, this can't be, again, it can't be true of literal Jerusalem, because Jerusalem was occupied by what? The Muslims in two different waves, right? We had the Mohammedans, and then we had the Turkish Muslims occupied.
Well, right. That lasted, like 1,800 years.
Right. So certainly there weren't any watchmen in the city of Jerusalem for all that time, okay? Again, this can't be literal Jerusalem. It's talking about us, the people. Verse 7, and give him no rest till he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. Yahweh has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no more give your corn to be meat for your enemies, and the sons of the stranger shall not drink your wine for that which you have labored. Of course, so this day has not come yet. And, of course, none of this is true of the Jews either, because the Jews have never been parasitized by others. Okay? They're always the ones that have been the parasites and have taught other people how to be parasites. Okay? So these passages cannot be the Jews in any way, shape, or form.
They'll never be parasitized, because the only place they have a country now is in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and they exclude everybody else.
Right.
And treat everybody else as second-class citizens. They can't. The Arabs have no opportunity to become parasites on them.
Right. And nobody has ever lived within a Jew. No outside group has ever lived within a Jewish community to sponge off them like the Jews sponge off of us. Okay.
Right.
That just simply hasn't happened. Verse 9, but they that have gathered it shall eat it and praise Yahweh, and they that have brought it together shall drink it in the courts of my holiness. Go through the gates, prepare you the way of the people, cast up the highway, gather out the stones, lift up a standard for the people. Behold, Yahweh has proclaimed to the end of the world, say you to the daughter of Zion, behold, your salvation comes. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of Yahweh, and you shall be called sought out, a city not forsaken. Okay? So obviously, we have the 10 northern tribes that were cast out in 745 B.C. A great number of Judahites and Benjaminites joined them, around 700 A.D. and maybe a little later, under Sennacherib. They were carried off by Sennacherib and, and joined up with them, although some of them obviously became known as the Jutes. Okay, Jutland Peninsula was settled by the tribe of Judah. The Frisians, the Danites, many of our ancestors traveled up the Danube River and settled on the western coast of Europe, and of course the British Isles, Ireland, Spain, etc. Okay.
Now this Gates, go through the Gates.
Okay.
This has a this is actually drawing a picture. It's a metaphor. Cast up the highway, go through the gates of the sojourn of the children of Israel through the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, we're going to see the full proof of this in 66, chapter 66.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the word gates was used by the Greeks, like thermopylae. Pylae means a gate. And thermopylae mm-hmm. is plural, A-E, and that's plural. It means gates. Mm-hmm. It means warm gates.
Oh, okay.
And it's that word gates was used by the Greeks all over the map, wherever they went, to describe a mountain pass.
Oh, okay. All right, very good.
Even though it wasn't a literally gated mountain,
sure.
Doorway.
Right, okay. Chapter 63, verse 1. Who is this that comes from Edom? Uh-oh. Guess who we're talking about here?
No. Read on, because
okay.
We were talking about Christ.
Okay.
We're talking about the Christ. This draws a picture of Yahshua Christ at the day of vengeance, and his garments are dyed in blood.
Okay. With dyed garments from Basra, that this that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Okay. So from, maybe out of Edom might be better here. Why are you red in your apparel and your garments like him that treads in the wine fat? I have trodden the winepress alone.
Now, this is the answer to the question.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 2 is a rhetorical question.
Okay, yeah.
And 3 is the answer.
Okay. I have trodden the winepress alone. Of course, Christ was very much alone in his day of sorrow. And of the people there was none with me, for I will tread them in my anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. Okay, this is a misprint here. It says raiment. That's out the end here. So the Jesus loves everybody crowd must have a real hard time with these passages, and these passages, again, there's so much in Isaiah that is echoed in the book of Revelation. There's simply no doubt that at the second coming, Jesus Christ is going to kick ass.
This is Revelation. Well, it's Revelation chapter 14.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in Revelation chapter 14, I'm not prepared to quote that right now, but there are two harvests,
uh-huh.
and the King James has a serious mistranslation in it.
Okay.
Because the King James has both harvests being of the ripe.
Okay.
And there's two Greek words there translated ripe. And one of them is translated ripe incorrectly. The second harvest is of the ripe grape.
Uh-huh.
The first harvest is actually of the parched.
Okay.
And the King James translators translated it ripe.
Huh.
They took a word that meant parched.
Okay.
And the parched vine, and they translated it ripe.
Okay.
And it's I explained that at length, I believe, in the Compare Revelation series that Clifton published on his website.
Mm-hmm.
Now the here, what we in Revelation 14, we see two harvests of grapes. The first one being of the parched. That's the harvest of the tares, as explained by Christ in Matthew 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the second harvest is of his people, the harvest of the wheat. They are the ripe grapes.
Right.
Now, Revelation 19, 11 through 16, and I saw the heaven has been opened, and behold, a white horse. He's sitting upon it, faithful and true, and he judges in righteousness and makes war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his eyes are as flames of fire, and upon his head are many diadems, having a name inscribed which no one knows except him, and he is cloaked in a garment dipped in blood.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's where we can, and he shall, All right, and his name is called the Word of Yahweh, and the armies in heaven follow him upon white horses clothed with clean white linen, and a sharp sword comes out of his mouth in order that he may smite the nations, and he shall shepherd them with an iron staff, and he shall trample the vat of the wine of the wrath of the anger of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Isaiah is correlating here.
Right. Yeah, there's a definite correlation right here with chapter 63, and this is going to be blood and guts. It's not going to be rapture and everybody pray and we'll all avoid the rapture. The tribulation. It's going to be big-time tribulation for everybody. Verse 4, for the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come.
Now, this to me proves the interpretation that we had when Christ stood in the assembly hall in Judea and he read Isaiah 61:2.
Right.
And he read up to the point where it says, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord,
but
and stopped there.
Didn't quote the judgment verse of the, or a phrase,
right,
the same verse.
He didn't quote, and the day of vengeance,
right,
of our God to comfort all that mourn.
Right.
He didn't quote that part.
Because he didn't come for that yet.
Right. And yes, it's explained here.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah, it echoes that right here as well. Very good. Verse 5. And I looked, and there was none to help. And I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore, mine own arm brought salvation to me, and my fury, it upheld me. Bringing up this word Edom in verse 1, because when Yahweh instructed the Israelites to exterminate the Edomites and Canaanites, and our people failed to do it, he stated that, if our people had done it, they would have achieved glory much sooner. But since our people failed to do it, then he said, I'm going to have to do it myself.
Well, right. This is a very clear picture,
mm-hmm,
that the day of vengeance is against the Edomites.
That's right.
It's the same, mm-hmm, as Obadiah, I think, 17, right?
Yes.
Obadiah 17. It's the same thing, or Obadiah 18. It's the same thing.
The
house of Joseph will be a fire, and the house of Israel a flame, or how I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
And the house of Esau shall be stubble.
Right. Yeah.
This is the same picture. And
right,
we see it in the last day, in the day of vengeance, his vengeance is primarily directed towards Edom.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay, verse 6. And I will tread down the people in my anger and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength to the earth. Again, echoing Obadiah. Verse 7. I will mention the loving kindness of Yahweh and the praises of Yahweh according to all that Yahweh has bestowed on us, and the great goodness toward the house of Israel, which he has bestowed on them according to his mercies and according to the multitude of his loving kindness. And, of course, I suppose we still have a few Israelites running around saying, Yahweh's not kind. he's always punishing me. Well, if he's always punishing you or me, it's because we deserve it, right? He doesn't punish anybody, and he doesn't. And in fact, Paul says we should rejoice in tribulation.
We should rejoice in tribulation. But Yahweh continues to punish us because, even on we in identity, people in identity want to accept the racial message and go out and attain their own sovereignty.
Right, right.
And Yahweh says that if you love him and his law,
yes,
and your brother, that he will give you sovereignty.
Right.
There's a huge difference there.
Right, right. Yeah, we can't claim it on our own, and the people who try wind up getting thrown in prison.
As long as we try, we stay in the flesh.
That's right. That's right, because we're not doing it according to his will. Exactly. Verse 8. For he said, surely they are my people. Okay, we belong to him. Okay, we have to do it his way. If we do it his way, then liberty is the result, real liberty. Children that will not lie. Okay, we're not supposed to lie, folks. There's no reason for us to. We don't have to lie about the Jews. All we have to do is tell the truth about them and their empire collapses. But everybody believes their lies. my people, children that will not lie. So he was their Savior. In all their affliction, he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity, he redeemed them, and he bore them and carried them all the days of old. Now, of course, Paul constantly tells us that our salvation was not earned by us. We didn't earn it by our attitude. We didn't earn it by putting the sacrificial animals on the altar. You know, we didn't earn it by any of those rituals and obeying the law according to our own desire, right? We were forgiven, plain and simple. We were just forgiven through his mercy. We didn't earn it.
Well, we were forgiven, but we were also bought.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
We bought without money.
Yes.
The price in his blood.
Now we're bought twice, right? Because the first time we were dedicated to Yahweh when Isaac was offered on the altar, right? And
right.
All of Isaac's descendants are therefore Yahweh's. Okay.
Well, he sold us for sin. We sold ourselves for sin.
Right.
And sin, and he redeemed us back anyway.
Right. And then at the redemption, at the cross, we were bought again. Okay. So we were redeemed. Okay. We were bought and redeemed. And so we twice belong to Yahweh. Okay. Verse 10. But they rebelled and vexed his Holy Spirit. Therefore, he was turned to be their enemy, and he fought against them. Whenever things go wrong for us, it's because we're violating his law. Then he remembered the days of old, Moses and his people, saying, where is he that brought them up out of the sea with the shepherd of his flock? Where is he that put his Holy Spirit within him? Of course, now we have to ask, your average Judeo-Christian, your Israelite who calls himself a Christian and doesn't understand he's an Israelite, does he ever hearken back to these redemptive occurrences? You know, Yahweh saved us from the Pharaoh. He saved us from the the temptations in the desert. How many times did we violate his laws in the desert? He could have destroyed us then. He saved us. He saved eight of us from the flood. Okay. And we're being reminded constantly the numerous times that he has saved us because he loves us. It's about time we love him back.
Even Paul made it a point in Corinthians to tell the Corinthians that they were baptized. Their ancestors were baptized in the sea
mm-hmm.
and in the cloud with Moses.
Right.
And
right.
for that reason, don't commit fornication like your ancestors
yeah.
committed fornication.
Yeah. And Paul was definitely not talking to Jews. The Jews are trying to kill him, okay? He's talking about Israelites and Judahites.
Well, the Jews, yeah, you know, John 8:33, I mean, they still claim that they weren't, that they might be ignorant of the fact that they were in bondage to David at one point, but they still claim that they were never in bondage to any man. So,
right.
So they're basically denying they were in the Exodus.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, verse 12. That led them by the right hand of Moses with his glorious arm, dividing the water before them to make himself an everlasting name, that led them through the deep as a horse in the wilderness, that they should not stumble. As a beast goes down into the valley, the Spirit of Yahweh caused him to rest. So did you lead your people to make yourself a glorious name. So it's very important for us to remind ourselves that Yahweh has done all these things for us. Become a historical Christian. Verse 15, look down from heaven and behold from the habitation of your holiness and of your glory, where is your zeal and your strength, the sounding of your bowels and of your mercies toward me? Are they restrained? Of course, we talked about in the Greek, the expression bowels being, that gut feeling. And equated that very often with love and tenderness.
Right, and it should be affections, the affections. Sounding of thy affections and of thy mercies.
Okay. Verse 16, doubtless you are our father through Abraham, though Abraham be ignorant of us, and Israel acknowledge us not because we're their descendants.
Well, our parents would disown us when we don't follow righteously.
Right, right. You, O Yahweh, are our Father, our Redeemer. Your name is from everlasting. Oh, Yahweh, why have you made us to err from your ways? Okay, well, of course, he hasn't made us to err. That's our own fault. But we're asking these questions, right? And hardened our heart from your fear or your respect of you. Return for your servant's sake the tribes of your inheritance. This is Isaiah pleading on our behalf, folks. Verse 18. The people of your holiness have possessed it but a little while. Our adversaries have trodden down your sanctuary. Who might that be? Could it be Edom in verse 1?
Now, the NAS reads verse 17 as a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Why, O Yahweh, do you cause us to stray from thy ways and to harden our hearts from fearing thee?
Mm-hmm.
It's a rhetorical question.
Yeah. Okay.
Which seems to make sense.
Right, right. And then return for your servant's sake the tribes of your inheritance. Is that how does the Septuagint finish that verse?
Well, this is the North American Standard Version.
Oh, okay.
Which actually does a pretty decent job on a lot of Old Testament passages.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's far from perfect, but any Masoretic text manuscript is going to be far from perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Why, O Yahweh, do you cause us to stray from thy ways and harden our hearts from fearing thee?
Mm-hmm.
Return for the sake of thy servants, the tribes of thy heritage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a rhetorical question,
yeah.
which makes sense.
Okay, verse 18, the people of your holiness have possessed it but a little while. And, of course, our people didn't possess his holiness for very long. We swore in Exodus to uphold his law. And a few days later, if not only a few hours later, we started breaking those laws that we swore to.
Right. And from the prophetic viewpoint and the end times viewpoint, I view this to describe the period between in Daniel chapter 7, after the fall of what I believe points to the papacy or the expiration of the second beast. Yeah, you know, Napoleon ended the temporal power of the papacy. But
mm-hmm.
Napoleon never held hegemony. Yeah, you know, not for long. The British did.
Right.
The Anglo-Saxons came to world leadership and have been there ever since.
Mm-hmm.
However, we've been trodden down. The sanctuary has been trodden down. Our place of rulership
mm-hmm.
and leadership has been trodden down by the Edomites.
Right, since 1815, for sure, yes. Verse 19, we are yours. You never bore rule over them. They were not called by your name. Now of course, them, again, is this talking about the Edomites here?
Or all any of the enemies of,
mm-hmm.
of God. But it could very well mean the children of Edom who have usurped control today, who have usurped our sovereignty.
Right. Yeah, because it seems to be there's scolding going on here, and half of the time he's scolding us, and the other half of the time he's condemning Edom, okay? And so it's not always clear which is which. You have to pay real close attention here. All right, chapter 64, verse 1. Oh, that you would rend the heavens, that you would come down, that the mountains might flow down at your presence. Be careful what you ask for. Verse 2. As when the melting fire burns, and, of course, the next judgment is going to be by fire, the fire causes the waters to boil, to make your name known to your adversaries, that the nations may tremble at your presence.
And that's, you know, verified in Matthew chapter 13, as the tares are gathered and burned in a fire, so
mm-hmm.
shall it be in the end of this world. And 2 Peter 3:7, but the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men.
Right.
And
right.
And now it's arguable as to whether or not the fire is metaphorical.
Well, yeah, it's certainly going to be, I think it's going to be both, of course.
Okay. Well, it could very well be a combination, yes.
Yeah, because what we have, as Jesus put it so well, there shall be a wailing and a gnashing of teeth.
Well, right, and it could be argued that the water wasn't metaphorical, so neither is the fire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, there's different philosophical ways to look at it.
Right, right. But there's going to be plenty of tribulation. It's going to be mental, physical, spiritual, incendiary. Verse 3. When you did terrible things which we looked not for, you came down, the mountains flowed down at your presence. For since the beginning of the world, men have not heard nor perceived by the ear, neither has the eye seen, O God, beside you, what he has prepared for him that waits for him.
Now, I'd like to quote 1 Corinthians 2:9, where Paul paraphrases this.
Okay.
But just as it is written, things which eye did not see and ear did not hear and came not into the heart of man, those things Yahweh has prepared for them that love him.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so if we're faithful and true, we will experience these things. If not, we won't. So, I mean, the reward, the potential payoff here is tremendous. Verse 5. You meet him that rejoices and works righteousness, those that remember you in your ways. Behold, you are angry, for we have sinned. In those is continuance, and we shall be saved. Okay, that's a little cumbersome translation here. What do you have, the NASB there handy again?
Thou meetest him that rejoices and works righteousness, those that remember thee in thy ways. Behold, I'm sorry, I'm reading the King James.
Oh, yeah.
it sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Thou dost meet him who rejoices in doing righteousness, who remembers thee in thy ways. Behold, thou wast angry, for we sinned. Now, this is in italics. We continued in them a long time, or we sinned in them a long time, and shall we be saved? Another rhetorical question.
Okay, yeah, because this in those is continuance, and we shall be saved. That expression doesn't seem to make much sense. The NASB seems to make more sense there. Very good. Verse 6, but we are all as an unclean thing, and all our righteousness.
Now that thing is added to the text again.
Yeah. Yes.
We are all as the unclean.
Right. It's not a neuter meaning at all. And all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags. That's, of course, our personal evaluation of ourselves. We tend to rate ourselves very high, but Yahweh knows the score. And we all do fade as a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind have taken us away. And there is none that calls upon your name that stirs up himself to take hold of you. Of course, that's we can't take this absolutely literally, because he has always had a remnant. But Isaiah is bemoaning the fact that so few Israelites really call upon his name.
Now the NAS translates 64:5, for all of us have become like one who is unclean.
Okay, very good.
That's an honest translation.
That is very good.
I don't think they do that where Paul discusses this in 2 Corinthians chapter
8. Do they keep the word thing in the NASB? Okay, verse 7. And there is none that calls upon your name that stirs himself up to take hold of you, for you have hidden your face from us and have consumed us because of our iniquities. And, of course, in Revelation chapter 21 and 22, we are told that we will see his face. Okay, you have to achieve a standard before he will show you his face. You have to achieve a standard of righteousness.
Well, right. When we're obedient, we're given mercy and we're held in honor.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're not obedient, when we're sinful, we're no better off than the beasts walking the street.
Right, right. And, of course, he wants to hold us in honor because he is our father and we are his children, and he wants to treat us this way. However, we have to earn it. We have to deserve it. He's not going to treat us like sons.
We want to treat our own children the same way.
That's right.
You do it this way or there's the door.
That's right. That's right. Verse 8, but now, O Yahweh, you are our father. We are the clay and you our potter, and we are all the work of your hand.
And this is Jeremiah 18:6. O house of Israel, cannot I do with you as this potter, says Yahweh. Behold, as the clay is in the potter's hand, so you are in mine,
right,
house of Israel.
And we should take these verses very literally, folks. We are the work of his hand. He is the potter. We belong to him. Verse 9, be not
angry. But when we screw up, it's not his fault.
Right, of course.
It's not his fault.
He made the mistake of giving us free will, right? Verse 9, be not angry, very sore, O Yahweh, neither remember iniquity forever. Behold, see, we beseech you. We are all your people. Why, this is a bad translation here. Verse 10, your holy cities are a wilderness. Zion is a wilderness. Jerusalem, a desolation. Verse 11, our holy and our beautiful house, formerly holy and formerly beautiful house, where our fathers praised you, is burned up with fire, and all your pleasant things are laid waste.
And it's happened again.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people would, the doubters of the last half of Isaiah, or the last third of Isaiah, would say that this proves it was written later. But I would say that Isaiah is a prophet.
Right.
You know,
he's not
necessarily writing this after the fact.
Yeah.
He's writing it as if it's a truth.
Yeah, yeah. And virtually everything in Isaiah has double meaning. Sometimes the original meaning is simply a historical statement, you know, and then it has a prophetic fulfillment. Sometimes it's a second prophetic fulfillment, okay? We found out that the early chapters were virtually all prophecy. And, you know, it's a combination of judgment and prophecy, fulfilled many times over, right? In various parts of our history, okay? Chapter 65, verse 1. I am sought of them that asked not for me. I am found of them that sought me not. I said, behold me, to a nation that was not called by my name. Okay?
Now, I would like to describe divorced Israel from Hosea 1:9-11. And then said Yahweh, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. They were totally put off. When you divorce a wife, she no longer is called by your name. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered.
Right.
And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there it shall be said, ye are the sons of the living God.
Mm.
Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel, which is judgment,
and the
day of judgment. And that again shows that, you know, these, we were not going to be called by his name.
Right.
But this is who he's addressing.
Yes.
In spite of that, because the promise of preservation is to those same people,
right,
not to a replacement church.
Yes, exactly, exactly. It will be regathered Israel, as Ezekiel 37, to the two houses, the two sticks, and the verses you just quoted. There are many verses that say that Israel will be restored, okay? In Zechariah, we're told that Israel shall be as if they had not been cast off. Total restoration. Verse 2 here, I have spread out my hands all the day to a rebellious people, which walks in a way that was not good after their own thoughts. Of course, we've been doing this for centuries, for millennia.
Quoted by Paul in Romans 10:21.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Verse 3, a people that provokes me to anger continually to my face, that sacrifices in the gardens, again, is a reference to these Baal worshippers.
But, well, the pagan religions of Europe and the Canaanite, they're Canaanite religions.
Yes, yeah, and they're still doing it today. What was that, the owl worshippers in the Bohemian Grove, right? And burns incense upon altars of bricks, which remain among the graves and lodge in the monuments, which eat swine's flesh and broth of abominable things in their vessels. Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
Now these Odinists really do burn incense and worship in groves.
Uh-huh, right.
It's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
And they try to say it's the original European religion. Well, that's because the original Europeans brought the Canaanite religion into Europe.
That's right, that's right. And while the Canaanites were starting pretending to be us, and they adopted, at least peripherally, superficially, Israelite religion, but maintained their true hatred of Yahweh throughout. Yes. Verse 5, which say, stand by yourself, come not near to me, for I am holier than you.
That's the priestcraft.
Yeah. These are a smoke in my nose, a fire that burns all the day. Man, you know, ever you get downwind of a campfire and get all that smoke in your face? Verse 6, behold, it is written before me, I will not keep silence, but will recompense, even recompense into their bosom, your iniquities and the iniquities of your fathers together. All right? Ours and our ancestors as well, says Yahweh, which have burned incense upon the mountains and blasphemed me upon the hills. Therefore, I will measure their former work into their bosom. Okay? So it's going to be payback time. Verse 8, thus says Yahweh, as the new wine is found in the cluster, and one says, destroy it not, for a blessing is in it, so will I do for my servant's sake, that I may not destroy them all. Now, of course, the metaphors of the old wine and the new wine typically mean the old covenant and the new covenant, okay? And the new covenant is simply one of mercy and writing the law of Yahweh in our hearts, okay? So, and he does this for our sakes, so that we can be redeemed, and otherwise we would be destroyed. There's simply no doubt he would have destroyed us. Either redeem us or destroy us, one or the other. So we really have to appreciate what happened at the cross, folks. There's a very, very significant event for us, and it only applies to Israel. Only applies to Israel. Verse 9, and I will bring forth a seed out of Jacob.
Now if this is... If this is, and it's wrong to do so, if seed is interpreted as a single seed here,
right,
it seems to support the single seed liners, the single seed crowd, the Judeo-Christians who
right.
say Christ is the only heir.
Yes.
And that whole position is just ridiculous.
Right.
And the seed and the elect, which is a collective unit, and the servants are all the same here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and in the Hebrew, seed is almost never used to apply to a single person. And it is only in a couple of instances, in terms of like Johnny is a bad seed, okay? But almost never used, and it's always collective, meaning our people as a group. And I will bring forth a people out of Jacob and out of Judah, an inheritor of my mountains, and my elect shall inherit it, and my servants shall dwell there. Okay, of course, now, Jesus, the individual, did not inherit any of this, did he?
So
no, it can't
absolutely
be about him.
Not.
Can't be about him. Verse 10, and Sharon shall be a fold of flocks, and the valley of Achor a place for the herds to lie down in, for my people that have sought me. Okay. Those who have sought him, not just any Israelites, but those that seek him. Verse 11, but you are they that forsake Yahweh, that forget my holy mountain, that prepare a table for that troop, and that furnish the drink offering to that number.
Now, the word are here is not necessarily in the text.
Okay.
And it's in italics here.
Yeah.
And he's addressing you, but you, they who forsake Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He's addressing the group that forsakes him.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it's still a matter of addressing here, it's not a simple declarative sentence here before the comma. But you, they that forsake Yahweh, that forget my holy mountain, that prepare a table for that troop, and that furnish the drink offering to that number.
Let me say that the NAS translates this to support my contention.
Okay.
But you who forsake Yahweh.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, very good. Verse 12, therefore will I number you to the sword, and you shall all bow down to the slaughter. Because when I called, you did not answer. When I spoke, you did not hear, but did evil before my eyes, and did choose that wherein I delighted not. Now, of course, the New Testament Christians don't like this vengeful God, okay? But the fact is, the New Testament God is just as vengeful as the Old Testament God.
Well, absolutely. All you have to do is read the Revelation and some of the parables.
Uh-huh.
He's coming back to destroy. He's coming back to destroy his enemies. They're still here. They'll be with us until he comes back. Now verse 11, in verse 11, this is... Comparé sort of tries to make this verse famous, right? that number. And it's actually a word, Gad, and they try to make a pagan god out of it. Troop. And that number is Mene, which was allegedly the name of a pagan god.
Uh-huh.
But those words don't really have to be interpreted in that manner here, and I personally would not interpret them here. I think that this is actually, some take Mene, Gad and Mene to be the names of particular idols, but I rather believe that that troop and that number are the enemies of Yahweh, and this is a condemnation of those who placate them, those who placate the enemies of God.
Okay.
Those who forsake Yahweh and forget his holy mountain have to be those who go over to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Those who were found partying today with the devil.
Right.
Those Saxon people who are feeding the beast in New York and in Los Angeles and everywhere else we are. And those people will be condemned with the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I will number you to the sword, and you shall all bow down to the slaughter, because when I called, you did not answer.
Right.
If you support the system, if you placate the enemies of God, you're in trouble when he comes back.
That's right.
You are one of the five maidens who had no oil.
Right.
The five maidens who had no oil, where are they found?
Mm-hmm.
In the markets. When he comes back, they're in the markets.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because they bought other stuff the last time they were in the market, right?
Well, no, because they're in the markets feeding Mystery Babylon. It's all about mercantilism.
Right, right. Very good. Very good. Okay, 13. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, my servants shall eat, but you shall be hungry. Behold, my servants shall drink, but you shall be thirsty. Behold, my servants shall rejoice, but you shall be ashamed. So ultimately, justice will prevail, right?
Well, right. And even the people of God that forsake him and choose the enemy, that's who he's talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Verse 14, behold, my servants shall sing for joy of heart, but you shall cry for sorrow of heart and shall howl for vexation of spirit. So though it's not going to be easy for those people who countermand the will of Yahweh. It's not going to be easy for them at all. Verse 15, and you shall leave your name for a curse to my chosen, for Yahweh Elohim shall slay you and call his servants by another name.
Now, going back to verse 12, this is spoken to those who reject Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And those who rejected Yahweh and sided with his enemies. And that's what allowed his enemies to infiltrate our nations and our temples, so to speak.
Okay. Verse 15, and you shall leave your name for a curse to my chosen, for Yahweh Elohim shall slay you and call his servants by another name, that he who blesses himself in the earth shall bless himself in the God of truth, and he that swears in the earth shall swear by Elohim of truth, because the former troubles are forgotten, and because they are children hidden from my eyes. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. Of course, Peter utters these very same words.
Well, I like to quote Revelation 21:1.
Okay.
And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth departed, and the sea is no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the sea in the Revelation, it is the non-Israelite mass of people.
Yeah.
The beast rose out of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
The sea and the waves roar.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
And they are the goats, the goat nations. They're no longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Verse 18, but be you glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. And we should be rejoicing, and we should be a joyful people. But because we are constantly disobeying his laws and practicing unrighteousness, we create trouble for ourselves. Verse 19, and I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people, and the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. Praise Yahweh for that day.
And that language is very much like the language in Revelation 21:2. of the city that descends from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a definite correlation to Revelation 21 and 22. I'm sorry, 21 verses 1 and 2 right here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I've got to kick out a couple of trolls here real quick. There shall be no more there. There shall be no more
trolls.
Yeah, right. No more there an infant of days, nor an old man that has not filled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. Okay, well, you can still become a sinner in your 100th year.
Well, I think this is saying something else. I think that if you're a sinner and you live that long, that you're only being punished even more.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
let me, this is really confusing, and I think that the NAS clears it up, and it doesn't even mention the sinner.
Okay.
No longer will there be in it an infant. Now, this is added to the text, who lives but a few days.
Okay.
In other words, an infant of days, I would think that originally said. Or a man who does, or an old man who does not live out his days, for the youth will die at the age of 100. In other words, somebody 100 years old will still be considered a youth, a child. And the one who does not reach the age of 100 shall be thought accursed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And verse 21, and they shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. And of course, that's the way it should be. We should.
Well, we won't have to move because of the aliens anymore.
Right. They won't be dispossessing us anymore. Verse 22, they shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and my elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. Now, of course, your modern Judeo-Christians don't see the meaning of these verses at all. They don't see that it's happening right now, this very moment, that we're doing all the work, and all of the other people in the land are feeding off of us.
Well, right. Our fathers died to protect this nation for their children, for us.
Mm-hmm.
Not for Mexicans and Negroes,
yes.
But Mexicans and Negroes are reaping all the benefits.
Yes,
of
yes. Okay.
Now, I'd like to say, you know, as the days of a tree or the days of my people, that reflects back to the lifespans of the before the flood.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
When men lived 1,200 years or 1,000 years or,
yeah.
You know, very
right.
long periods of time.
Right, mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, how long does a tree live? Some trees live tens of thousands of years.
Right, right, yeah. And if Paul can be believed, our bodies will live forever, okay, once everything is restored.
Well, right, this is only making metaphorical promises.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, verse 23, they shall not labor in vain. Oh, praise Yahweh for that day, nor bring forth for trouble, for they are the seed of the blessed Yahweh. Of course, now here it can't be mistaken because it says they, right? And their offspring with them. Verse
right, and their offspring are the seed too, and that's definitely a racial message. There's
right.
no doubt about it.
Exactly, and descendants is what the word seed actually means. Verse 24, and it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. And while they are yet speaking, I will hear. So as soon as we have it in mind to make this call, Yahweh is prepared to answer. Verse 25, the wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock, and dust shall be the serpent's meat. Okay, well, actually, it has been ever since Genesis 3, even before Genesis 3:15.
Well, right now, we're the serpent's meat.
That's right. That's right. You're
it's
absolutely right.
If we were obedient, then the serpent, we wouldn't be his meat.
They would only have our dust to eat if we were obedient. That's right. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain.
And this
Yahweh.
Can't be talking about destructive animals. It has to be
right.
talking metaphorically of people.
Yes, it's metaphoric people. That's right. Chapter 66, verse 1. The heaven is, thus says Yahweh, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you build to me? And where is the place of my rest? Well,
now, Stephen, Acts 7:49, Stephen quoted this in his defense, and the Jews still stoned him.
Yes, right, right. Verse him that is poor and of a contrite spirit and trembles at my word. That's what we're supposed to be, folks. We're supposed to be contrite for all of our past sins and trembled at his word. This is understanding. Verse 3, the promises are magnificent here. He that kills an ox is as if he slew a man. He that sacrifices a lamb is as if he cut off a dog's neck. He that offers an oblation as if he offered swine's blood. He that burns incense as if he blessed an idol. Yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delights in their abomination. So
therefore, all their sacrifices are rejected.
Right.
That's what verse 3 is telling
us. So any of our people who engage in these Canaanite, pagan rituals, he's not going to consider them. They won't be considered for the kingdom. Verse 4, I also will choose their delusions. I love this verse. And will bring their fears upon them. And, of course, Paul echoes this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And it will bring their fears upon them, because when I called, none did answer. When I spoke, they did not hear, but they did evil before my eyes and chose that in which I delighted not. And, of course, we are talking about all these Judeo-Christians today who do not regard his law and do not regard his prophecies.
And where Yahweh will choose our delusions, how much of our reality is really imposed upon us through our own disobedience?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It's always self-imposed, when we disobey. There's no doubt about that. Verse 5, hear the word of Yahweh, you that tremble at his word, your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let Yahweh be glorified, but he shall appear to your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Okay, again, repeating theme here. Those of us who side with Yahweh will be glorified, and those who side with the Edomites will be ashamed. Verse 6.
Well, right. I'd like it. Your brothers who hate you, who exclude you for my name's sake. That's Luke 6:22.
Mm.
Blessed are you when men cast your name out as evil for the sake of the men.
Right, yeah. And then Daniel makes a similar statement, I believe in chapter 12. Verse 6, a voice of noise from the city, a voice from the temple, a voice from Yahweh that renders recompense to his enemies. Before she travailed, she brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. Who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? Now, isn't this the verse that the Jews like to quote for the bandit state? That it was like, as if it was brought forth in one day?
Well, right, but this is basically, before she travailed, she brought forth.
Mm-hmm.
Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. This is talking about, first, it could be pointing to Christ,
sure.
But it is also pointing to the fact that as soon as Israel was punished, she travailed to give birth to new nations.
Mm-hmm.
That many new nations were born after the Assyrian deportation.
Yes.
The Germanic nations did not exist
mm-hmm.
before the Assyrian deportations.
Right, right. Yeah, and you can say that certainly the Israeli state was not born in a day. The Balfour Declaration was issued in 1917. The UN resolution that created the State of Israel in 1947, and then Truman recognized it 6 months later. So it's at least a 30-year process.
But what they're looking at is one half-assed, parasitical little state of vipers.
Yes.
And what we're looking for is, for as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children,
mm-hmm.
plural,
yes.
many nations,
yes.
many Germanic tribes,
right.
as we're going to see in Isaiah 60 and later in this chapter, flooded into Europe a short time after, within a couple of hundred years of this.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Verse 9, shall I bring it to birth and not cause to bring forth, says Yahweh, shall I cause it to bring forth and shut the womb? Of course not. Rejoice you with Jerusalem and be glad with her. All you that love her, rejoice for joy with her, all you that mourn for her. Now, again, this cannot possibly be the literal city of Jerusalem. We're talking about the people of Israel. Verse 11, that you may suck and be satisfied with the breasts of her consolations, that you may milk out and be delighted with the abundance of her glory. Okay? Now, of course, our people have seen glory. And we almost had a totally Jew-free country. But that wasn't meant to be, not yet. Verse 11, verse 12. For thus says Yahweh, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the nations like a flowing stream. Then shall you suck, you shall be born upon her sides, and be dandled upon her knees. Okay? Like a very, very safe child. Verse 13, as one whom his mother comforts, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem, my people, Jerusalem. Verse 14, and when you see this, your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like an herb, and the hand of Yahweh shall be known toward his servants, and his indignation toward his enemies. For behold, Yahweh will come with fire, and with his chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury and his rebuke with flames of fire. And how many times, and not just in Isaiah, but throughout the entire Bible, are we warned about this day when he will come in fury and anger and with fire? Verse 16, for by fire and by his sword will Yahweh plead with all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens, behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh, and the abomination and the mouse shall be consumed together, says Yahweh. Of course, they sanctify themselves, I mean, according to their own rules.
Well, right. It's paganism again.
Yeah.
You know, the paganism of the groves and the eating of unclean meats and the sharing of oneself with unclean persons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this tells me that if we examine this, that this happened once before. It happened after the deportations.
Right.
The Scythian Israelites took part in many wars.
Right.
And this tells me that Israel was cleansed of all the bad seed
mm-hmm.
during the Assyrian deportations. That the bastards were slain in the process.
Yes.
And that's what these verses are telling me.
Okay.
And this let's see, Amos 9:9 talks of the same thing. If we read Amos chapter 9, he's talking about the children of Israel going into captivity. And Amos 9:9 says, for lo, I will command, and I will sift the house of Israel among all nations,
mm-hmm.
like corn is sifted in a sieve.
Yeah.
Yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. We were sifted through the Assyrians mm-hmm. and the Persians and the Medes.
Yes. Yes. Okay, verse 19. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them to the nations, to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, to Tubal and Javan, to the isles afar off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the nations. Of course, the Jews didn't go to these places.
Well, this is very important, this verse,
uh-huh.
and I put a lot of stock in this verse,
okay.
and that's because, verse 18 says, for I know their works and their thoughts, it shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. And I believe that means all Adamic nations
mm-hmm.
and tongues,
yes. Yes.
And that was probably fulfilled when the Scythians, along with armies from all the other Mesopotamian nations, were in league with them. The Medes, the Persians, the Chaldeans, to destroy the Nineveh and the cities of Assyria.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in 608 BC. That happened 90 years after Isaiah wrote this.
Okay.
Okay? But not all of the Scythians took part in the destruction of Assyria. The Chimerians, who were the Cymri of the house of Omri, the children of Israel,
yeah.
The Chimerians, the Scythians that the Greeks knew as Chimerians.
Yeah.
Because the Scythians that crossed into Europe while Assyria still had the hegemony
mm-hmm.
were known to the Greeks as Cymri or
yeah.
Kimmeroi because Akkadian was the lingua franca at
mm-hmm.
the time.
Right.
And 50 years after Isaiah wrote this, the Cimmerians crossed into crossed Anatolia,
uh-huh,
and flattened Phrygia.
Okay.
And destroyed many of the cities of Lydia and threatened Ionia.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
These same people, well, right, that's Lud is Phrygia,
mm-hmm,
is Lydia, I mean. And Phrygia is actually Tyras or Thrace. Yeah, you know, the Phrygia was a colony of,
uh-huh,
the Thracians.
Okay.
Okay, of Tiras, who is mentioned in Genesis chapter 2 also, but is not mentioned here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Lydians are Lud here,
yes,
and the Ionians are Javan here.
Right.
And the Cimmerians, 50 years after Isaiah wrote this, flattened Lydia and threatened Ionia and crossed, that they turned north and they crossed through the Bosphorus into Europe. And by 390, they had flattened Etruria, which is part of Lud. The Etruscans came from the Lydians, by all historical accounts, threatened Rome. They sacked Rome. And a couple of centuries, not even a century later, they had established Gaul and they had settled in the Iberian Peninsula and became known as Celt-Iberians,
mm-hmm,
which are the same people that the archaeologists today describe as Celts and Proto-Celts, right?
Right.
These Germanic tribes, everybody, all the mainstream historians and Indo-European so-called experts recognize these Cimmerians as Germanic tribes.
Right.
Went to all the same places that Isaiah said that the children of Israel would go to,
mm-hmm,
within a couple of centuries.
Yeah.
And nobody else was there since.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, nobody else has invaded those areas since except Germanic tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Wave after wave of Germanic tribes.
Right. Yeah, and in fact, that reminds me of a question I meant to ask a bit earlier when the Judahites and Benjaminites were taken under Sennacherib. Is your impression that they still maintained a separate existence and stayed behind longer than the 10 northern tribes and thus becoming the Parthians?
Well, it's hard. The Parthians are only a small portion of the Scythians,
okay,
themselves.
Yes.
Okay. And they are definitely Israelites.
Yes. Yes. No
doubt. But there's always a tribe that Herodotus that seems to be more northerly than most of the Scythians, that Herodotus terms the royal Scythians.
Oh, okay.
And several other Greek historians call the royal Scythians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that could be any tribe but Judah.
Okay.
I mean,
yes. So they would be Judahites, and it would be Pharaoh's Judah.
It's a very odd coincidence if they're not Judah.
Yes.
Why would they be considered the royal tribe of all the Scythians?
Mm.
Would be a very odd coincidence if they're
not
Judah.
Right. Yeah.
And it can't be proven, but why? Why would they exist?
Right.
Yeah, you know, and according to Herodotus, the other Scythian tribes recognize these people as the royal Scythians.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we obviously have many waves of Israelite from approximately 745 B.C., through when do you think the last migration was? It would have to have been a Germanic / Parthian migration from Armenia, okay, and before that became one of the European nation states. What's your sense on that?
The deportations went all the way down through Israel through 676 B.C.
Okay.
And the time of Esarhaddon.
Okay.
And the Babylonian deportation of the last people in Jerusalem. And some of those were good figs.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Jeremiah saw good figs and bad figs in that basket.
Right.
And I'm sure they didn't all stay in Babylon. And in fact, there's a prophecy here in Isaiah about Israel coming and Israel and Judah departing,
yeah,
and that seems to me to be the Scythian involvement is Persian as mercenaries or fellow tribes with the Persians in the taking of Babylon,
yeah,
that seems to indicate to me, and that didn't happen until 550 BC, Yeah. The last of the Israelites who were going to migrate beyond Mesopotamia probably didn't migrate long after that.
Right. Okay. Because the last wave, waves, had to have stayed in Assyria / Armenia for long enough to pick up some Armenian language, okay, and Armenian syntax, which differentiates the Germanic from because the Cumru are the ones who are known as the Welsh, okay, and so the Cumru had to have migrated almost directly from Anatolia straight over to England.
Right. I don't know what you want to call Armenian language. I mean, it's certainly
Aramaic.
The Saka, and we're going to discuss this if we get to Isaiah 18.
Okay.
Okay. You're going to see my viewpoint of that.
Okay.
Now the Saka and the Massagete, that they actually departed from the Persians and the Assyrians and the Medes and some of those tribes and dwelt in the Jacaris River Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And the Oxus River valleys in northern India and what we would know as Kazakhstan today.
Okay.
And they stayed there for many centuries until they finally migrated west.
Okay.
They were the last waves of Goths and Saxons to migrate west.
Yes.
And they were there and they had, you know, the Saka inhabited Sogdiana and Bactria, according to the Persians, and were... The Sogdians and Bactrians were related to the Saka by Herodotus.
Mm-hmm.
That these people, these descendants of the Israelites, broke into many tribes and multiplied greatly in a couple of hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as we did here, we multiplied and covered the whole continent
in
a short period of time from 1776, say.
Yeah, 100 years.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Less than 100 years. And that they have, the more land we have open to us, and the more fertile it is, the faster we can multiply. It's basically all mathematics. Resources plus people equals much more people, right?
Right.
Those tribes that migrated last would have had a much greater influence of the Assyrian, and Assyrian is a Semitic language, but it is different.
Yes.
It is a totally different dialect. And the Persian tongues and the Median tongues, that they would have had a much greater affectation by being exposed to those languages a lot longer.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, for many centuries, where the Kimmerians, the first people who crossed Europe, they had what even archaeologists today and anthropologists today call Q-Celtic, or P Celtic as opposed to Q Celtic.
Okay.
You know that there's two different distinctions in the Celtic language.
So
and
Q-Celtic
I believe that's
be the,
why.
Yeah.
I believe that one of them belongs to the Proto Celts,
right,
who are really Hebrew Phoenicians.
Right. Okay.
And the other belongs to the Kimmerians,
right,
who are the first waves of the deported Israelites to cross into Europe and did so within 75 years of the deportation.
Okay. So
that they weren't deported until the 720s BC, and they destroyed Phrygia circa 650 BC.
Okay.
And some of the cities of Lydia circa 650 BC.
Okay. So do you think they left Lydia and Phrygia by sea toward Wales, or was this an overland migration? Or was it a combination of both?
Well, there has to be. It has to, I believe that they crossed Europe.
Okay.
And they crossed Europe to the shores of what we know today as Germany, Saxony.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. And that's where Tacitus puts the Kimmerians.
Uh huh. Okay.
And that's where very much where the the earlier historians, Strabo and Diodorus Siculus, put the Kimmerians there.
Yes.
And they're the same places where Tacitus puts the Angles and later tribes. And Tacitus also mentions the Kimmerians as being in that area.
Okay.
At the mouth of the Rhine on the German side.
Yeah.
And the tribes that crossed the Rhine are the tribes that basically gave in to Caesar.
uh-huh.
and curried his favor.
Yeah, okay.
And they're the, you know, the ancestors of the people of Holland today.
Yeah.
They're the ones that sided with Rome. That's the way I look at
it. So I just wanted to give the audience a rationale for why some of the Israelites maintain their Hebrew, and then Celtic, of course, are all versions of Hebrew, with Welsh being the most Hebrew, virtually 100% Hebrew. But then the Germanic has all kinds of Persian and Aramaic mixed in because they stayed longer, and that would be the Gothic. The last wave would have been the Gothic wave. Okay.
Well, right. And you know, Jordanes gives two versions of the Goths. The
okay.
first one is fiction. All the Goths, and Jordanes is a Gothic historian of the 7th century
uh-huh.
A.D. Now, the first version he gives is that all the Goths hail from Gotland in the Baltic Ocean.
Okay.
Now, we know that can't be true.
Right.
The Ice Age tells us that can't be true. But he also claims that the ancestors of the Goths were the Scythians who fought Cyrus on the Araxes River.
Okay.
And that's where Diodorus Siculus and the Greek historians put the origin of all the Scythians.
Yeah.
So if that were true, then the Goths had to hail from Mesopotamia, not from Gotland,
mm-hmm.
from Gothland.
Yeah, well, otherwise known as Guta, but wasn't that on the southern border of the Caspian Sea? Gutland? Aren't we basically talking the same
area? Well, we're talking about modern-day Armenia.
Right, modern-day Armenia, exactly.
Right, where the Araxes River was. It feeds into the Caspian Sea, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But it divides Media and... Well, it divides what we could consider. It would be the northern frontier of the ancient land of Media
uh-huh.
and the southern frontier of modern-day Armenia.
Okay.
And Sakasane is a big district there that Herodotus calls a very fertile district, and that is Sakasane. We see that word Saka, and that was a homeland of the Sakan,
mm-hmm.
the Saka, or the Saxons.
Yeah. And many of our Israelite ancestors refer to themselves as Isaac's sons, and that's where that name came from, Isaac's sons. Right.
Well, right. I believe that Sakasane is the remnant, you know, the remainders of the Scythians.
Yes.
They not all of them crossed over the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah,
I mean, just like in early colonial America, not all of us crossed over the Appalachians, right?
Right. And some of them, as you mentioned earlier, went from east of the Caspian Sea, not the Black Sea, which dumps into the Mediterranean, but the Caspian Sea, which is east of the Black Sea. Some of them went around the Caspian Sea on the east side, went up north into what is today is Russia. Okay.
Right, and they would have been the first inhabitants of the Jakartas and Oxus River valleys.
Okay.
Now the Tubal is another destination for the tribes.
Right.
I will send those Tubal. That escape to Tubal and Tubal at this time. And in inhabits along with Mesek that these are the Moski and Tabarni of Herodotus that inhabit the Black Sea coast.
Mm-hmm. Muscovites, Moscow. Right.
Well, they were forced north by the Scythians.
Yeah. Okay. So that the original Muscovites would have been Israelites.
Well, no, they're Japhethites.
Okay.
But were forced north by the Israelites.
Because
they virtually, after the time of Herodotus, they virtually disappear from. The records of the Greeks.
Right.
I don't see them any longer.
Yes. Okay. So in general, the Japhethites would be categorized as the modern day Slavic people, and then they inhabited these areas much earlier than the Israelites, and then the Israelites came through there because of the Assyrian deportations, and either displaced the Japhethites or intermixed with them. You know,
right, and there's you will take captive those who took you captive.
Uh-huh.
The Scythians, they ruled according to Herodotus. They ruled all of Asia for 26 years, and they ruled it when the cities of the Ninevites of the Assyrians fell.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they ruled all of Asia.
Yeah.
And even though the mainstream historians don't recognize that, it can be demonstrated from Herodotus' chronology of the kings of the Medes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Scythians, according to Diodorus Siculus, when they crossed the Caucasus, They forced many of the tribes of the Assyrians and the Medes to be their slaves and relocated them across the Caucasus with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Now, those people are described as described by Diodorus.
Yeah.
Those people became the Sarmatians.
Okay.
According to Diodorus Siculus.
Okay.
So we see that the Sarmatians are most likely descended from both Assyrians and Medes,
uh-huh.
Shemites and Japhethites.
Right. That's a,
and they were
all...
the bulk of the tribes later known as Slavic tribes,
right,
who forced
right.
their way into Europe behind the Germanic tribes.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Okay. So we need to summarize all this history in writing.
well, Classical Records and German Origins, parts 1-6 on my website.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Okay, so we only have about 8 minutes left, so I don't think we'll get back to Isaiah 18. Let's finish up. I think I left off at verse 21 before I asked the question about the migrations here. Yeah.
Well, that had to be discussed here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this is talking about. This is the ultimate proof in Isaiah that the children of Israel are their Germanic tribes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Verse 21, and I will also take of them for priests and for Levites, says Yahweh. Now, it turns out, as I understand it, that the German word Ludwig is the German for Levite, for Levi, okay? So that anybody named Ludwig or Ludwig's son would be, named after, doesn't mean he's a Levite, but named after Levi, okay?
Well, it seems that the more English and French forms, Louis,
yes,
of Louis are the same as Ludwig.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis and Levite, and they've always been equated.
Right, right. Okay, verse 22, for as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, going back to 2 Peter again, shall remain before me, says Yahweh, so shall your seed, that is your offspring, your descendants, and your name remain.
And that tells me that new heavens and new earth are metaphoric.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, certainly for the earth is going to still be here, but there's going to be humongous changes. Verse 23, and it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another shall all flesh come to worship before me, says Yahweh.
Now that means all Israelite flesh.
Yes.
And it really to me means all flesh to me means all Adamic flesh bearing
yep.
his spirit.
Right.
However, the proof of that is in Joel 2:28.
Okay.
And it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy,
mm-hmm.
and your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. That means only Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to Israel, your sons, your daughters, your old men,
right.
your young men. All flesh means all of their flesh,
yes.
all
yes.
Israelite flesh. It doesn't say, I'll pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and Hottentots will see visions, and
right.
Chinamen will dream dreams.
And even Jesus said, I come not but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Of course, and those lost in the house of Judah, many of the members of the house of Judah joined those lost sheep and became part of them. Verse 24, and they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed me, for their worm shall not die, or worm is a really bad word here. Anyway,
well, it could mean fire. They're fire. It doesn't really mean worm at all.
Yeah.
Their fire shall not die, neither shall their flame
their
be
zeal,
quenched.
Yeah. For their zeal shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring to all flesh. Okay. Again, this last... and they shall be an abhorring. So the same.
Well, this is talking about those that transgressed against me.
Okay.
Against Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to be one of those people.
Right, right. Okay, so in other words, this is a, the hellfire judgment here in verse 24. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So, I won't have time to do that rehash of Isaiah chapter 18. Maybe we can introduce, do you want to go right into Jeremiah next week?
Well, that's your call. I'll let you steer
yeah.
the car. You've got the driver's
okay.
driver's seat.
I think maybe it's either going to be Jeremiah or Ezekiel because I do want to talk about America in prophecy, okay? and maybe Ezekiel will be a little easier on that count. They're both about the same length in terms of numbers of chapters. So why don't we talk about it during the week, you know?
Well, right, and we should, you know, when we do Jeremiah,
mm-hmm.
we should really consider using the Septuagint order of the books. That
okay.
would be interesting.
Okay.
Because that's the correct order.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, let's talk about during the week, but I do want to start off next week's show with the discussion of Isaiah chapter 18, okay, and then we can maybe discuss a few America prophecies and probably both Jeremiah and Ezekiel, you know, just from that perspective, okay? All right, so we have completed the book of Isaiah, folks. We have read every single word of the book of Isaiah and done our best to interpret and translate and convey both the historical and prophetic meanings of these numerous verses. And Isaiah is just a treasure trove of both history and prophecy. It's a magnificent book that is written exclusively to Israel. Simply no doubt about that. Okay. All right, Bill, thank you very much for helping me hash through the book of Isaiah. Let's just say we'll talk about the America chapters of Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel next week, and then we will decide which book, either Jeremiah or Ezekiel, to focus on from that point, okay?
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh, and thank you all for listening. Tomorrow on Yahweh's Covenant People, we did Philippians, right? And we started 1 Thessalonians?
We're at 1 Thessalonians chapter 3.
Okay, so we'll continue with 1 Thessalonians tomorrow night, okay? All right, thank you very much. Yahweh bless everybody.